And I'm Sean David.
And this is Will Sean Podcast.
The internet cried out for two more blowhards, and we answered the call. Each week, we'll be joined by guests to discuss movies, television, popular culture, and anything else we fucking feel like talking about. Want to go ahead and, first of all, thank everyone for listening, downloading, subscribing. We had over 30 subscribers when I last checked. We had over 75 downloads, which means that some of you listened and listened to what we told you to do, and this is phenomenal. Everyone seemed to love it except for the one person, but they can go fuck themselves. And what we're looking for is we want double-digit growth every podcast. I want to see those numbers double, because if not, I'm going to start saying some really hurtful things about minorities and women. So
especially women.
Well, you know, it depends on my mood.
But we'd also like to thank Freddie Boutros.
Yes, Freddie, for making the wonderful logo, the clean, sleek, expressive logo that you all see. He designed it, and we want to thank him for it. We still owe him a beer.
Or, you know, a glass of milk or something like that.
Yes.
Whatever Freddie wants to indulge in.
That we will get for him. And once again, also, we want to thank our sponsor for the week, Izzy's Pest Control, for when it's smaller than a cat but bigger than a roach, call Izzy's Pest Control.
And this episode, we have our first guest.
Yay.
It's going to be before your introduction, let me just prepare yourself because you are going to go down in history just like the first guest on The Tonight Show,
yes.
Whoever that was. You're going to be
That's how much popular in history it went down.
And why don't you introduce him?
Well, you know, we promised you conversations about film, pop culture. So, of course, this first week, we have my friend Nathaniel Nate McGilnick, who is pursuing his PhD in molecular biology. So,
hello.
Right up our alley. Nate is a good friend of mine. I've known him for years and years. We grew up in Los Angeles. I've known him 10-plus years, and he was kind enough to make some room on his schedule this Wednesday night to join us in the podcast. Say hello, Nate.
Hello, mate.
So clearly this is going to be a whole science-based episode.
Yes,
so
it'll be like Bill Nye.
No. I get enough of that during my day. We can talk about Zooey Deschanel all night.
Tell us about your favorite scientist.
What's your favorite
who's really in the zeitgeist right now, science-wise? You don't really have to tell
No,
us.
You don't have to do that.
Let's get this going. I actually, as you guys both know, I'm from New York. Long Island. I have the very thick Long Island.
I didn't know that.
You couldn't? Well, actually, you didn't know. But I thought maybe my voice may have clued you in.
Terrible attempt at a joke on my part.
Oh. You know what? I thought maybe you really didn't know.
I didn't know.
The chair from Yankee Stadium tipped me off.
That's true. Now, you two both lived in L.A., and as much as a lot of you grew up in L.A., did you both grow up in the Valley?
I grew up in the city, but for the record, both Sean and I grew up in predominantly Jewish enclaves in Los Angeles.
The Jewish bubble, as we call it.
Our bubble had a bubble.
Yes.
There's actually been a part of me that's always wanted to burst into the Jewish bubble. I pretend to be Jewish sometimes. People think I'm just – exactly, because I'm attracted to the women with the Semitic good looks.
Whoa. Which are those exactly?
These are probably all the women you know who are listening to this. The SGL, the Semitic good looks.
Semitic good looks?
The best sexually, the best women I've ever been with have been Jewish women.
I can't argue with that.
I was with a wonderful, in bed at least, she was wonderful, Iranian girl as well.
Terrible as a person.
So maybe.
Well, the Iranians are not Semitic. They are a Turkic people from the Asian.
Well, this is what I'm saying.
They're essentially Aryan.
Yeah.
That's where the word comes from.
Yes.
That between this, maybe it's my penis that could help relieve tension in the Middle East.
We should just send you out there. You're like like Larry David and the Palestinian chicken.
So being in this Jewish bubble, did you have as much as – because I find L.A. to be so surreal, even more so. I've been all over Manhattan and stuff. But here in this town, I find myself in these situations where suddenly there are minor celebrities and I'm drinking with them. And how did this happen? Did you burst out of the Jewish bubble enough to experience that kind of L.A. or because you live here?
Well, yeah, only once I became friends with you.
growing up in Santa Monica, you see – more than the occasional celebrity.
Yeah.
So
and their kids.
It was never and their kids.
So it was never like a
yeah.
Yeah, but even in LA, you know, you see them around, it's just part of the landscape. Adam Carolla has a really funny bit on this where he talks about how growing up in North Hollywood, growing up in the Valley, never occurred to him that being in show business, being a writer, an actor, was something that you do. It never occurred to him that people come from other parts of the country, and that is their goal, to come to Los Angeles to act. He goes, it's like living by Disneyland, and Disneyland's just there. It never occurs to you that people come from all over the world to go to Disneyland. And then when he started getting older and meeting people, be like, wait, you moved here from where? From Philly? From Idaho? To come here to the Valley to do what? He says it just didn't even think that that was
came
something
to my backyard.
Yeah, exactly. You know, to North Hollywood to do what exactly?
I was always aware of that idea sort of as a trope, purely from osmosis, from, you know, films and television. It's such a cliche, you move to Hollywood, move to Los Angeles to, quote, make it. But, I mean, like, growing up, it's like, you know, who the hell want to live here? Why would you want to move here? It's too many people.
Good weather.
Hot.
I like it. Yeah. I personally love Los Angeles. I can't imagine living anywhere else.
I hate that I love it as much as I do.
New Yorkers hate when they fall in love with Los Angeles.
I hate that I fell in love with
Los
Angeles.
I feel the same way about Manhattan. I was in Manhattan about 5 months ago, and I had a fantastic time. It was
Manhattan, but I'm under no illusions. I know living in Manhattan, if I didn't have endless amounts of disposable income, and if my existence was anything other than just hanging out at the Met and at the Opera and museums and doing idle crap all day long,
living in a Woody Allen movie.
If I was living in a shitty, what do you even call them? The train apartments when it's just a big vertical, it's a horizontal,
a loft.
Three bedrooms. Not even a loft. It's you have to pass through two bedrooms to get to your bedroom, and then the bathroom is at the end. Boxcar apartment. If I was paying $1,500 a month to share a tiny...
If you were living under the Brooklyn Bridge in the 1940s, then...
Yeah. Even today, you know?
No, I know.
To have a job and be making crappy money and sitting on the subway, I would just be miserable living in Manhattan.
Well, the reason I bring this up is because I recently had a very surreal... One of those real surreal and probably most Hollywood L.A. night the other night. I have a very good friend. He's friends with Sean as well, who's... who's an actor named Nick. He's on this TV show, Revenge. Fabulous show.
Love it.
And I was out with him the other night. And now because I'm friends with this actor, I find I'm with him. People are looking at him. And it's just weird. And you'll like go out to
they're
a restaurant.
They're looking at you, Will.
They're looking at me. They're like, who's that guy with that handsome man? And
clearly he's carrying drugs.
Nick is not really a club guy, and I'm not a club guy. I hate clubs. It's just obnoxious and everything. But we were, you know, hanging out, and he said, look, my castmates, they're going to this club. Do you want to come with me? And I'm like, okay. So we go to this club, and, you know, we get in before a lot of people standing on that line because I'm with
two men together always get into a club.
They're the first ones.
Right in the front line, yeah.
But we get into the club, and I'm talking to some people from the cast who I'd met before, and it's a little surreal. But then it gets really surreal because we're standing there, and Rumor Willis, not like huge celebrity, but people know.
Daughter of Bruce and Demi.
Yeah. You could make $1,000, you know, taking a candid photo of her and selling it to the Inquirer.
Why didn't I think of it?
Next time you'll know better.
She walks up to Nick, because someone on the show or someone who worked on the show knew, and she just introduces herself to Nick, like, hey, I'm Rumor. And Nick's like, I'm Nick. And Rumor turns to me like, I'm Rumor.
I'm in your window.
Yeah. And then her friend Zelda, who later turns out to be, we didn't know it that night, Zelda Williams, Robin Williams' daughter, comes over, and she's talking, and we're all talking, and I'm like, this is really fucking strange. Like, this girl just... Because she's a celebrity, and I'm not saying she's using the celebrity
little
for this,
C,
but,
not a big C. Yeah.
But she could just approach somebody and know that she probably will have a semi in with them as to like start up a conversation. And I got to admit, I was a little not necessarily starstruck, but I was in the back of my head going, "She's the daughter of John McClane," and
G.I. Jane.
And it turned out to be such a strange, like, night because they're talking to me and Nick about how, we don't really like clubs and we just want to, like, sit around and have stimulating conversation. And I'm basically like, why the fuck are we all here then? Like, why are we here?
I've got a couch and a coffee table. Let's get it done.
Yeah.
Well, you know, what happened was she goes to Zelda, like, hey, Zelda, why don't we go back to your place? And Nick, who I think really just wants to go home, used me as the excuse to get out of it. He turns to me and he goes, well, you know, I got to get this guy home. He's got to do a podcast in the morning. And I was like, fuck you. You're not putting this on me. You're not putting it. Now we're going. And it wasn't even a celebrity thing. It's like that weird, like, I find in L.A., other than other cities I've visited, you find yourself on these weird adventures.
You do. You just end up – you just follow people because people don't – because you're not taking the subway home. You people – everyone lives in a discreet area, so you need to go to their neighborhood. It's not like anyone lives right by –
so part of that trek is the adventure.
It's a trek, and it's like swingers when they're all going in the caravan up to the Hollywood Hills.
And that's exactly what this is. And we went to this house in the hills, and it – and, you know, there were a lot of people there. It wasn't like just us. And in part, I went because...
To be honest, it was like the ending of Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. You get to her later.
You know what? Part of it was that it, more than them being celebrities, they were women. Yeah. But I'll, to be quite honest, they were both such sweethearts and they were wonderful. And it was just like, it's the kind of night. And this is why I you guys grew up here and I love your city because you find yourself on those kind of adventures here.
Please tell me that when you were leaving, you said to her, come out to LA, we'll have a good time.
Well, so tell them what Zelda invited you to in the future.
Oh no! Rumor told me and Nick that she would have a game night and we should go. So Rumor, if you're listening, I want to come to your game night. I want to play Jenga or something, whatever the hell. Balderdash.
Hungry hippos.
Yeah, exactly. No, she was a sweetheart. She was really nice, and you know.
Yeah, you know what? And it's funny because growing up in LA, don't have too many stories like that. Once again, I think part of that is a function of growing up how I did. Didn't really go out clubbing a lot, didn't go out to bars. And myself, naturally, not a terribly social person. I'm social, but I don't court these kinds of activities. If they find me, fine, but I don't spend enough time out at bars and clubs to be drawn into these nets.
I go to a club one night.
Yeah.
And I end up.
I think that's one more night than I've ever been to a club.
There you go. So let's move right along to some of the topics of the week.
Yes.
As you both know, as all of America knows, Star Wars Episode One: The Phantom Menace was re-released in glorious post-converted 3D.
See it again for the very first time, the way you've never seen it before.
This film came in fourth at the box office in a really good weekend for the box office when The Vow made like $41 million. This came
ladies love C-tates.
They do love C-tates. And the men will get dragged along to Radams.
So we got...
Rack Adams.
We've got...
Rack McAdams. I'm sorry.
Star Wars making $23 million
for a shitty 3D post-converted movie that's been around for 10 years, 12 years? How long did this come out?
15.
It hasn't been 15 years. Not for episode 1.
2000.
99.
Okay. So 13 years ago. Oh, dear God.
Did you, Nate, rush out and see it again for the first time?
There's some movies you can never see too many times. I want to remove all memory of that movie from my brain. And like everything, that can be done with alcohol.
But what if you bring alcohol to the movie? See, part of me wants to see... Of the three of us, I think I was the biggest diehard Star Wars fan. I didn't see the movies till much later, till about sixth grade. I was a late convert. And I was obsessed. I had multiple versions of the movies on various formats. I had all the books. I had collectibles. I had a shrine in my closet to Star Wars where I had all the toys set up. I had encyclopedias. I knew everything about the Star Wars universe. And
did you ever have the collectible card game?
Oh, yes. Myself and Avi and a bunch of people played the collectible card game religiously. I had almost the entire set of the light side cards for the collectible card game. So those of you don't
know, I love Star Wars. I don't know what the fuck you're talking about.
It was basically a magic card game.
You know what? We got to move on. We got to move on.
Oh, it's so good. I had everyone.
But I mean, so...
But even I will not go see this movie in the theaters.
I don't think I had as much paraphernalia as you've just listed, but I, you know, some of my earliest memories are of watching the Star Wars movies
over and over and over again,
drawing lightsaber battles. I think at one time I had just like just a sheaf of construction paper, and the only thing I had drawn in it was lightsabers.
And it was very easy to draw too. It was just you'd make the straight top, and then it was essentially a rectangle, and then you would just have to make the handle, and then the little light rays coming off the blade.
And I read tens of those I don't know however many.
All the Timothy Zahn books. Will's losing patience here.
Now, I gotta move this along. But the thing with Star Wars here is when he first said, I'm going to put them all out in 3D, and he said, Episode 1 is going to be the first one that we put out in 3D, I said, big fucking mistake. No one wants to, but I guess I'm wrong because people went to go see it.
They did, and they took their kids, and I think children respond much better to the new versions. And some kids, you know, that I've talked to, and parents, children, their kids prefer the prequels over the original trilogy. And I think part of that has to do with the fact that there's video games and computer games and these Star Wars Lego games, and there's much more of an interactive in the Star Wars Lego, and a lot of that content is from the prequel trilogy and not from the original trilogy. The same way, and all of us are just a little too young to have been around when the original Star Wars trilogy came out, so we're kind of the second wave, but the same way that generation had the Kenner toys, and that was revolutionary.
That was such a big thing.
There was a
no
way for you to tangibly
that.
Interact with the content.
Continue playing through the story,
after
you're
exactly.
done watching
I believe
the movie.
Ewoks, and Jedi was the first movie I vividly remember seeing in the theater, but I believe Ewoks weren't even called Ewoks in the movies. It was just the toys that were called
they
Ewoks.
Were called
I mean, it's kind of
movie.
Amazing. Do kids like Jar Jar Binks?
You know what? For as much as people shit on Jar Jar Binks, he's not
the worst thing in the movie.
He's not, but Grant, give it to Lucas that
he's the showiest worst thing in the movie.
People still remember the character. Everyone knows Jar Jar Binks.
The problem with Phantom Menace is that you could drive an ice pick through your frontal lobe and still essentially follow the plot, which is...
Well, I disagree. I think the plot is this complicated series of political and
trade federations.
That's because you're an adult. But if you're, you know, an 8-year-old and sitting there, okay, well, the guy's got to go down to the planet. He's not thinking, well, why do they have to go down to the planet? Why can't they just go get, you know, why do they have to land in the forest?
Why do they need to go underwater to get the Gungans on board?
He's just there's shiny things and there's things being shot and he's on along for
a ride. But think about the world at the beginning of Star Wars for a New Hope.
It's fantastic. It's just the ship pursuing.
No. But
you
even
see
the tech,
the Star Destroyer,
the Rebel Alliance is. You know,
it was very simple.
It was very simple.
This started off with a train, but it's weird because Episode 1 is more of a kid's film because you do have you have baby Vader. The one thing that I think. When I first saw the movie, I walked out and I didn't necessarily hate it. And I think the reason is it does end on a very simplistic but wonderful high note. That Darth Maul lightsaber duel actually kicks fucking ass.
It does kick ass.
And the soundtrack for that is probably one of the best pieces from the original.
I actually enjoy the soundtracks. I have the soundtracks for all three of the prequel movies. I think it's some of John Williams' most interesting work. If you go back and listen to his stuff in the Attack of the Clones, you can hear a lot of influence of electronic music. He kind of more effects, a little bit more of a tech sound to it, especially the Coruscant scenes. But we'll discuss that when they release Episode 2 and 3.
Episode 2, exactly. There's this guy I work with. I think he's on drugs. But anyway,
hello, friend of Will's on drugs who's currently listening to the podcast.
He recently – he's like in his 20s, and he recently saw all the movies for the first time.
And they start from
he started number one and ended with Jedi. And this shocked and disgusted me. If you have children, how would you start them off? I would start them off 4, 5, 6.
Oh, of course.
Just five. Just Empire Strikes Back.
There's no doubt.
Context.
4, 5, and 6, and then maybe after the bar mitzvah, they can watch the original.
you should make
now
them wait
a man.
Long time.
Yeah.
You've built up a tolerance to deal with what... And, look, we're about to start a new segment on the show, which is Enemy of the Podcast. And it's a little obvious, but because somehow he was able to trick a whole bunch of assholes to go wait on a line and go at midnight
pay
3D prices, I'm sorry, maybe on the nose, but George Lucas, you are the enemy of the podcast for this week.
I don't disagree that he's an enemy, but just getting back to...
Why am I an enemy of the podcast?
The movie's performance over the weekend. Maybe I'm wrong on this, but $20 million, that sounds like it was a rainy weekend in some parts of America.
No, but you know what? That was the number four
people just wanted
movie.
To occupy their kids.
There was also more people went to go see Journey 2, The Mysterious Island. That made over $20 million. This was the fourth place movie. There were
that's almost $10 million per rock peck.
Yeah.
George Lucas keeps raping our childhood. And you know what? Now he's raping Tuskegee Airmen or something like that.
Red Tail.
Funny story about that, which I probably got this from reading a bunch of movie blogs. So this is in no way an original thought. But so he basically went around to promote this movie and he said, oh, well, you know, I've struggled for so long to make a movie with black people, with all black people. And it's like... And this same movie was made. It's basically just a crappy remake of the original Tuskegee Airmen movie, which is also
but
with all black
George's
people.
But it's not George's black people.
Yes.
And you know what? If you want to make a movie with all black people, just you should have CGI'd them into your freaking Star Wars movies. And by the way, I'm sorry.
He's going to digitally go back and make Luke. George, I'm telling you right now, George Lucas is going to go back and he's going to make Luke Skywalker black.
And Han Solo's going to have a huge afro.
And you know what? It still wouldn't be as offensive as adding Hayden Christensen to
Mace
Jedi.
Windu, white. Besides him re-releasing the prequel trilogy, just four or five months ago, he re-released the films again on DVD and this or Blu-ray. And this time he decided that he needed to make more tweaks.
No.
Whatever. Darth Vader scream. I don't want to go too much into this. But
yeah, it's been...
You know what? It's his property. He can do whatever he wants with it. He owns it. Fine. And you can make an argument whether or not anyone owns memories.
I think once you put something out there, it kind of becomes...
At least Spielberg had the
people's
Spielberg
thing. At least... Give us both versions.
Right.
When
Spielberg put
key.
Out the re-release of E.T., he put out both versions, and then he recently said that he regrets going and changing the guns in E.T. to walkie-talkies, and in the future versions of the movie, he's going to revert it back to guns.
Now, real quick.
Yes.
On the Enemy of the Podcast, and we did not pick an Enemy of the Podcast last week.
We did not.
But if we did, it would have been Stephen Daldry, who we ripped for his awful, extremely whatever movie before we had seen it. I've come here to tell you I have seen it.
Will has gone to the...
And it is as shitty as I thought it would be. It is a maudlin nightmare, as I predicted.
But is it aggressively bad?
It's boring. It's crime is boring. And it's also, it treats 9/11, I feel, as not like United 93 or even Oliver Stone's World Trade Center movie, which treat it with a little bit of honor or dignity. It treats 9/11 as arty spectacle. There's images of Tom Hanks falling from the building, all like done in this weird slow-mo. It's borderline offensive. And Max von Sydow, who got nominated, he is good, but his plot goes nowhere. And
I remember that he was not in the book. He was added as a character in the movie.
There's a twist about
him. Okay, well, I did not see this movie, and did not see it.
Can I tell the twist? Can I spoil the twist?
Let me guess what the twist is. He's the grandfather.
He is!
Yes.
He's the fucking grandfather! And there's another thing about his background.
Okay,
he's a mute character. He's only suffered in the past through something.
All right, let me guess.
Dresden firebombing.
No, Holocaust survivor. Really?
You wrote the movie.
While you're raging, let's tack on.
I swear to you, I did not see this fucking movie.
While we're raging, let's tack on Jonathan Safran for writing the piece of shit in the first place.
Well, I guess the people like the book. I haven't read anything by him. He wrote, what was his first book? The other Holocaust. And I only made those guesses.
They made that Elijah Wood movie about him trying
to
find his grandparents.
Everything is illuminated.
Everything is illuminated,
dredge him. Which he wrote, by the way, as a senior in Princeton, everyone needs to do a senior thesis, which is a significant piece of written material, either in your field, researcher in your field. So as a creative writing major, he had to write about 150 pages of a perspective novel. And the first 150 pages of Everything is Illuminated were his senior thesis at Princeton, which was heavily edited and mentored and workshopped by Joyce Carol Oates, who had been his professor at Princeton. So a little bit of insight there. And then she loved it. She loved him. Maybe he was sleeping with her. but she arranged for it to get published as he was getting out of Princeton.
2 weeks in a row, you gave us like little literary trivia.
Well, that's what I do.
That should be another segment on the show. Yeah, Sean's literary corner. Trivia. Also this week, speaking of money grab movies,
yes.
There were two trailers that came out. One for the new Bourne movie, yes. And one for the new
Bourne
Spider-Man
Legacy,
movie.
Also known as Bourne 4.
Is Michael J. Fox still the cinematographer?
You know what? And that's my issue with those movies.
You know what? I have to argue because Bourne Supremacy and Bourne Ultimatum are two. Nate is making herky jerky. Yeah, that doesn't really read on a podcast. Nate is making herky
jerky cam.
Is making the shaky cam movements. I love the Bourne Supremacy and the Bourne Ultimatum. I think they redefine the way action movies are made and thought of.
They redefine them, I don't think, in a good way.
They're pretty good, but if you're going to shoot fights like that, just don't bother shooting them. Put up a little title card. They fight.
They fight.
He wins.
Because you can't see what's going on, and it's very frustrating to me.
I disagree a bit. I think that of the directors who peddle in this type of shaky cam style – what's his name? The guy who directed
Greengrass
does it better than anyone else. The fault lies not in the thing, but in the imitators and in the iterations that came out of it.
Speaking of imitators, we no longer have Matt Damon as Jason Bourne.
No.
Now we have Jeremy Renner as somebody else.
You thought Jason was only one.
Which I admire their willingness to get the actors
so desperate.
And shoot like, oh, and by the way, this also happened.
Well, I guess what's his name is coming back as Ezra.
All of them.
Kramer.
Brian Cox.
All your favorites.
Not Brian, because he died.
This is set before they all died.
It's
with Joan, what's her face?
Joan Allen. Brian Cox.
Thin face guy.
Chris Cooper, David Cesarian. They were all
No, there was one.
Back.
Who's the other actor? He was, God damn, it's going to bother
David
me.
David Cesarian?
No, it was another one. He was, plays Ezra Kramer. He was, in the movies. This will come to me, whatever. Continue.
Sidebar, have you ever seen that YouTube clip of Brian Cox teaching, like, a 5-year-old the to be or not to be soliloquy?
No.
It's very funny.
Okay.
Audience, YouTube it now.
YouTube.
We're going to make that go viral.
Yes. Okay, so this Bourne 4 doesn't bother me as much. Tony Gilroy, who wrote the second and third, and also wrote and directed Michael Clayton and Duplicity. Michael Clayton, which was a brilliant movie. Duplicity, which was a very ambitious movie that I think was a bigger movie than he was capable of directing. He's directing this film. Good cast. The same creative team behind it. Gives me a little bit of hope, but the real question is why? Why do we need another Bourne movie? Because you've essentially isolated anything that made it interesting, and now it's just generic, shadowy government conspiracy. Insert random character, helicopter shots, fighting, go.
But isn't the big issue that both this and Spider-Man are another example of just things that kind of just feel like we don't know what to do, we're Hollywood, we're creatively bankrupt, and we don't know what to do anymore. Let's reboot Spider-Man 4 years later.
With Spider-Man, the issue with these comic book movies is that these are licensed properties, and if this is the same reason why Fox keeps going back to the X-Men the same reason why they had to make Wolverine Origins, X-Men First Class, and now while they're making the Wolverine.
They'll lose the rights if
they don't
use it.
They lose the rights and reverts back, so they need to do something with the property. Same reason why Fox is currently rebooting Fantastic Four again. Because if not, it reverts back to Marvel. So
here's the flip side of that. Yeah. Sorry to break in. Yeah. Whatever company, I think it was Universal, they're coming out with that crappy Battleship movie.
Yeah.
They gave Mattel $20 million to break their licensing deal.
Oh, yeah. I read that. Yeah.
Because
who did they have it with?
Mattel.
Oh, wait. Hasbro had –
Yes, Hasbro. Or was it
– Maybe it was Hasbro.
Maybe
it's
Hasbro.
By the way, the company that – the toy company that makes Battleship.
Yeah.
And Universal was like, well, we can't keep making these game movies.
Because they signed up for Candyland, the other movies.
Yes.
So
they know they have a turkey on their hand with that Battleship. They know they have – they know they have the shittiest – what do you do when you know you've spent – millions of dollars on the shittiest
$200 million.
It looks
that's
like the
before
same
marketing.
Way that the Godzilla movie looked like a poor man's version of Jurassic Park. This looks like a poor man's version of the Transformers movies. It's all the designs for the aliens look just like the Transformers, but not enough. But going back to Spider-Man. Okay, fine. You want to have a new character in the Bourne world with the company and the agency and that whole conspiracy, fine. All right. I'm sure I'm still going to buy a ticket and go see it. But they're telling the same Spider-Man story again. They're remaking a movie that came out 10 years ago, and they're trying to spin it as if, oh, here's the Spider-Man, as if like you never knew him before. No, there's going to be a couple scenes with his parents, so we have some additional Oedipal issues for him to work through. There's a different girl. It's going to look slightly different, and there's a CG bad guy. That's it.
It's a pretty blatant cash grab.
It's a cash grab, and you know what? I don't blame anyone involved with this movie. I blame Sony.
What I'd like to see is them, you know, mix it up a bit, you know. It's been, you know, I've been reading Spider-Man comics for 20-some-odd years.
Yeah.
A little tired of Aunt May. They should shoot a version where Aunt May dies, instead and Uncle Ben bed. Gets to hang around.
Hey, I like it.
That's a good idea. That would really, you know.
And you should also be mad at him for making your...
My sweet Emma Stone.
Sweet Emma Stone, without her beautiful,
you know,
red
she
hair.
She looks... you know that red hair is dyed. That's not her natural hair
I
color.
I know, but she looks so
Yeah, she looks
good.
Better as a redhead than a blonde.
She does. But
she
you
looks
know what?
Good
I watch a trailer, and she seems the only one that's comporting herself and is somehow surviving.
I'm sure she's the best thing in it.
She's the best thing
if she plays Gwen Stacy, she is not long for this film.
Yeah, she's the best thing in anything she's in.
Now, speaking of women, and maybe more polarizing women, this week one of the most polarizing figures in pop culture hosted SNL. And that is Zooey Deschanel.
Yes,
you're now, sweet Zooey.
I love Zooey.
Here's the thing. I love her. I know people. Again, I know a guy who at work. He was in a coma. Maybe when he came out of it, he was all screwed
but
up.
Also, he's a heavy drug user. Yeah.
No, you shouldn't.
We'll cut that out.
But anyway, no, we won't. The point is. He hates her. He thinks she's unattractive. He says she has dead doll eyes. He's out of his mind. Personally, I would slit both your throats and burn this apartment to the ground on the off chance she might spit on me. That's how attractive I think she is.
I recently watched the first episode of The New Girl, and I think that if you don't find
Zooey Deschanel... second episode, different black guy.
Okay.
Yeah.
They look alike.
If you don't find Zooey Deschanel crying her own theme song, you have no soul.
So, Yaron, I was half hoping you would dislike her, but how could you? I was half hoping to have an argument, but...
No one here is gonna argue with that point. So, yeah, she hosted SNL this week, and, of course, instead of a monologue, she sang an adorable little song.
But it was, like, very self-aware.
Yes. I think she knows... I've been in love with Zooey Deschanel. People like her from Almost Famous. She actually didn't make an impact on me in Almost Famous. The first time I ever noticed her was in the... It was the Brian Sonnenfeld movie with John Travolta. It was like a crime movie.
It was with Tim Allen.
With Tim Allen,
it was,
yes.
That's an unusual pairing.
Big Trouble,
something like that.
Something like that.
And she plays the daughter, and she was just charming and adorable, and her face and her expressive face and her eyes. I fell in love with her then, and I've been a huge fan of her.
I saw her in Mumford.
I remember, that's right, she was in Mumford.
You know what, here's the thing, because early in her career, she played the kind of alienated... darker girl. Like, she has this role in The Good Girl, where she's just like this really sarcastic, just kind of apathetic, and people who know me know I'm really attracted.
Yeah, she was like that in Big Trouble. That was the movie, Big Trouble.
Is
that the Dave Barry Florida?
Yes,
movie?
That was the Dave Barry.
I don't think John Travolta was in that.
No, it wasn't. It was Tim Allen. Yeah. But it was.
Guys.
It was
someone from Old Dogs.
The thing is, it's just something about, like, she had that apathetic personality. And even, like, I watch 500 Days of Summer and I say, like, this woman would be no good for me, but I want her so badly. And she plays these
500
characters.
Days of Summer, which is, in my opinion, the only romantic comedy made for men.
So why don't people like her?
I think they don't like her attitude. They don't like her whole persona. You know, and whether how much of that is a persona or not, I don't know. Zooey, if you're listening, please give us a call. We can discuss it.
I think part of it, at least at this stage, is a reaction to the sort of fawning that people see from people like us. The Sean-type fawning. I think it's a reaction
to
that.
It's our fault people hate her?
Just the skosh.
This is very disappointing because I don't want to hurt her.
Well, how are you going to hurt her?
When I ultimately lock her in my room.
Oh, I see. Yes.
No, I don't want to have to hurt you. So no, but she's so that show. I mean, you just saw the first episode for the first time. I've been watching it all season.
Yeah,
I think it's such the perfect vehicle for her. Like, it gives her an opportunity.
Remember when the trailers before the show came out, they kept trying to to sell this show as, oh, she's so weird. Look, she sings to herself. How could anyone date this girl? She's strange. She doesn't do what everyone else is supposed to do. And I remember you saying, I don't understand. If I met this girl, I would date her in a second. She's adorable.
Yeah, I want
– adorkable.
Yeah, huh? Copyright, probably.
Yeah, Fox.
But, yeah, no. I mean, I thought she did a good job. Did you happen to catch SNL this week?
No, I saw a second of the Quirky Girls Club skit, which I thought was fairly self-aware.
It was very I thought it was good, and Abby Elliott did a good job as Zooey Deschanel.
Zooey Deschanel. She's very impersonable. Personatable, yeah.
Since we're talking about SNL anyway, and we're talking about women, I would like to make a statement that this is the most attractive cast in the history of SNL.
I have a thing for Vanessa Brayer, I must say.
I think it too. She's got the SGL. She's got the Semitic good looks.
She is Jewish.
So I'm all about her.
Yeah, she's got the brown hair.
And I've also got a thing
for
Nazim Pedran, who's got the Iranian. So clearly I'm all into...
I think because I know she's Iranian, I'm less inclined to be attracted to her. And then I can't look at Abby Elliott without seeing the shadow of her father in her face. Her father, Chris Elliott, from the short-lived and brilliant sitcom Get a Life.
Yes, which was fantastic. Yes. Also with Brian Doyle Murray.
Yes, that's right. He played the father. Yeah. Who else is on the cast? Kristen Wiig. Yeah.
I think all of those are I would proudly sleep with any of those.
If any cast members from SNL are listening, please feel free to give us a call.
But I think even for the women, I know a lot of women who like Jason Sudeikis and you know, think he's
Bill Hader.
Is he the one who was dating January Jones?
Yeah.
Yeah, he dates everyone.
Olivia Wilde.
And I understand he's successful and funny, but there's got to be something going on in his pants. I mean, that guy pulls in serious women. It's unbelievable. Can we talk about the Clint Eastwood sketches from this week?
Fantastic.
Which cracked me up. They did a spoof of the Clint Eastwood.
Second down for America. Whatever
second
the hell
down, he's growling. He's growling in the shadows about how it's the second half for America. So they had Bill Hader doing his Clint Eastwood impersonation, growling, "Game's over, America. While you were napping on the couch, Mexico won by 30 points." It's very funny. And they did it three times, and each time they did it, they kept changing it up. The second time it was trying to be a commercial for Pizza Pizza. Then the third time Clint Eastwood growls at the end, "I'm Batman." And it puts a card out saying Dark Knight Rises coming out in July 2012.
I think Clint Eastwood needs to do all future commercials as his character from Gran Torino.
I mean, that's who I felt he was. Well, certainly in the parody, that's who he was. But even watching that, I'm like, oh, it's Gran Torino guy. He's mad at us for America, like, not getting off his lawn.
For letting America fail.
I loved in the skit because he's like, I don't care who's in the game. Mitt Romney, Barack Obama, as long as it's not Rick Santorum. Which, you know what? Fuck that guy. I don't know if we should get political, but fuck that guy. Hey, speaking of the Super Bowl, are you a sports guy?
I'm more of a fan of the epiphenomena of sports, but yeah, I enjoy football.
Okay. I'm not going to bring up football, but big sports story this week that I thought should bring up, and I don't know if we're all aware of this, of Linsanity.
Are you aware of
Linsanity?
I'm aware of Jeremy Lin.
I'm on the Lin train.
What do you think of – I mean, is this going to really last?
Well, do you want us to get into like an in-depth discussion of the mechanics of basketball and his role on the team as a true point guard?
I think it's more – well, I mean, maybe. I'm just saying that –
Well, they did win again tonight, 100-85 against Sacramento.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So
that was the team he was just a bench warmer for.
Yes.
And I was going to say, if he was doing
that GM's getting fired.
Yeah. He only had 10 points, but he did have 13 assists tonight.
If he was doing this for Sacramento, we wouldn't be talking about him. It's just that he's doing it on the biggest stage in all of sports, Madison Square Garden, right?
Well, I think if he went from bench warmer to his current stats, if he was in
Oklahoma City, would we be talking about him?
Yeah. You know what also? He's the only Asian American in the NBA, and he's
which
a massive
makes him
global
unique.
You know, they're interviewing him. They have reporters from Chinese television interviewing him after the games, and he's, you know, they're doing Chinese interviews with him, and he's definitely he's a good role model, and he's a good Christian. He went to Harvard. I mean, everything about this guy just smacks.
Well, it doesn't
wholesome.
It doesn't smack NBA player.
It doesn't smack. Well, I think that's part of the reason why He is. Well, I don't know, Nick. Were you
interesting?
Were you Will? Were you a Knicks fan? Growing
you know,
up?
I used to be really into the Knicks in the '90s and the teams with Patrick Ewing and Charles Oakley and John Starks, and they couldn't quite get over the hump.
Never.
You know, I mean, it was a nightmare. But then I kind of lost interest in basketball, and actually, again, bringing this conversation full circle as we start to wrap up. Coming to L.A. made me start to follow basketball a little bit more because this town is so bad. Like, that's the sport. This is such a basketball city. In New York, in Boston, baseball's big. Most cities in America,
well,
football's
big.
The Dodgers
are big here, but they suck for so long.
Nothing compared to the Lakers. Yeah. Honestly, when the Dodgers were in the playoffs a few years ago, nobody in this –
Dodgers flags on their cars.
I turn on sports radio. They're still talking about the Lakers.
Maybe in East L.A., not in Beverly Wood. You know, you don't see Vamos Los Dodgers. In West LA.
It kind of fascinates me that
because the Lakers are like the Yankees of the NBA. They're dominant and people like rooting for winners.
And I find myself unable not to root for them when I'm out here. Yeah. But if Linsanity is for real and the Knicks make a run at this thing, obviously I'll be flying a Knicks flag.
Well, if the Clippers make it to the playoffs, they very well may. And the Lakers are in the playoffs. Prepare for this city to tear itself apart.
It'll be insanity.
Yes.
Linsanity.
We'll see how long this lasts. They got a couple more easy games on the schedule. And then next week they're going to be playing Dallas on Sunday. And they'll be playing the Heat on Thursday.
As much fun as it is, Linsanity won't last.
After the game last Friday night when they destroyed the Lakers. And he put up 38 points against Kobe. Andrew Bynum said after the game, "Well, we just gave this guy 10 years in the NBA," which is pretty much true. Yeah.
Anyway, one other topic that we're not really going to delve into, but I figure I better mention, is Whitney Houston died the other day.
What?
I know.
Speaking of music, I'd just like to publicly thank the Grammys for once again allowing me to feel like a morally superior person for having Chris Brown back on.
Yes.
Now, we definitely are going to delve into that a little bit more next week.
Yes.
Because we have a music-oriented guest who I know actually has feelings about Whitney Houston.
Yeah, next week, we're going to be having singer, songwriter, beauty, Andrea Lynn Marchant, a.k.a. A. Lynn Mar, will be on the show.
And so we're going to delve into – we're going to hold Whitney off to talk a little bit more on her episode. But
well, her episode's over. Oh, I see. Andrea's episode. Subject-verb disagreement.
There you go. But I felt the need to bring it up because we did have a guest on now, and she did her body. Well, I guess her body's not warm anymore. But I mean, she'll be in the ground by the time Andrea's on.
Oh,
so
we will always love you.
Yeah,
love her.
She was good.
She's very good.
What I find incredibly creepy is that people are now clamoring to rent that same room that she died in.
That is
yeah,
creepy.
People like more fascination. By the way, fuck you, Sony, and we'll bring this thing up again next week. Within a half hour of her death, they jacked up the price on her greatest hits album.
We got a lot of Whitney stuff to discuss next week. We got a lot of music stuff in general to discuss. And like you said, we're going to have a wonderful musical guest. We're going to hear some of her music.
Yeah, hopefully we're going to have some live music on the show.
So I guess that's about it for this week.
I think so. I mean, I want to thank Nate,
thanks
for being
on
the show. Thank you for coming out on this weekday night.
Being the first guest in the history of what will be a long-running podcast. thanks for all of you for listening. Again, check back every 7 to 10 days and hit that subscribe button on iTunes. We're going to keep having episodes.
Remember what I said, I want double-digit growth or there's going to be some harsh words said on this podcast, a lot of tears.
And all you assholes who complained that all we talked about in the first episode were the Oscars, well, guess what? We didn't talk about the Oscars.
No, we did
this
a 7-minute bit on the Knicks and basketball, so I hope you fucking enjoyed that.
That's
what you signed up for.
Enjoy our potpourri of pop culture nonsense.
Exactly. That's a beautiful way to put it. This is why you are the first guest.
A potpourri of pop culture nonsense.
If you have any questions or comments, you could let us know at willseanpodcast@gmail.com.
Yes, please email us. It goes directly to my iPhone. I will respond in seconds.
You can follow me on Twitter @TheRealWillLink.
And I am the Sean David.
And I am Surly Adopter.
Do you have anything to plug?
No.
Any science? Are you going to, like, split an atom for us or something?
Yeah, well, the last thing that I was working on at my old job was just submitted to PNAS, so hopefully that'll be...
PNAS?
Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences. Oh,
okay.
Abbreviated
PNAS. I knew what it was, but I wanted everyone, yeah. You know, the audience to...
I was very aware.
You can pronounce it penis if you would like.
I think I would.
So,
do that.
We all
do.
Nate is plugging penis.
And visit my blog if I ever get around to putting anything on it. It's drinkingwithmycats.com.
Oh, that's a good blog, Dave.
Yes. You have
yes,
something
and,
to plug?
My book, Triumvirs, Three Tales, available on Amazon. Once again, I want to see some, I want to move some copies here. So everyone get it, buy it, read it. It's fantastic. You'll enjoy it. And if you don't, I'll give you your buck back.
I can attest to that. They're very enjoyable. Definitely New Yorker quality or above, if that's your thing.
There we go.
And I can attest that he will pay you your dollar back.
Will or will not pay you a dollar back.
Okay, and I have nothing to plug except this podcast, so I guess we're finished.
We're finished. Until next week, on to episode 3. Thank you, Nate.
Thank you.